Blog Talk Radio.
Each day do you wake up and get out of bed? You got all these feelings rushing round in your head. You got that bout with doubt and neighbors singing the blues. Pick up the paper and it's all bad news. But you know in the end, happiness is your best friend. You can be what you wanna be. Oh, dare to step high and live like you're free. I said color, color your life happy. Color, every day you can choose. Color, color your life happy. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
The difference between try and triumph is a little funky. We all have ups and downs, but you can still be happy. If you're gonna step, you might as well step high.
If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
ColorYourLifeHappy.com. Get your happy on.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, May 17th, 2010. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Our show today will inform, inspire, and encourage you, as always. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, Color Your Life Happy, How to Have a Successful Career While Keeping Your Family a Top Priority. And my special guest today is Kate Wright, so she's going to be sharing with us in just a moment. But first, I want to welcome all of you, my listeners. I am so honored that you made space in your schedule to join us because I know you have lots of other things you could do with your time. I encourage you to participate by asking questions or adding comments. Now, if you're on the phone lines and you want to ask a question or make a comment, just press 1 to let me know that you're ready. If you're over on the web chat, you just type in your question or your comments, and I'll be able to see them, and then I can read them on the air. Let me remind you that the show is live. Now, that means anything can happen. Lost signals is the most common thing that happens, and it even happens to me. So if your call is suddenly lost, then you'll know it's lost because you won't hear anything anymore. Just dial in again at 347-539-5700. And don't worry about missing anything because all the shows are recorded and available for you later under on-demand episodes over on my show page. Now, my show page is www.blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown. Now, if you enjoy the show, don't keep it a secret. On my show page, you can go there. You can follow me on Twitter. You can even follow me or post while the show is on. You can visit me over there on Facebook as a fan. And most important, add yourself as a friend of my show. Now, again, my name is Flora Brown, and I'm an author, coach, and inspirational speaker. I invite you to visit my website, ColorYourLifeHappy.com, and it is there that you can learn about all the various programs that I offer. Over there, I have a free weekly newsletter sign up. I also have a link to my blog, and you can also find out how to connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and all that over there. One of the most important and new things I have available is for those of you who live in Orange County or the Los Angeles area, because I started recently a meetup called From Overwhelmed to Overjoyed, Creating the Life You Want. And we meet twice a month, second and fourth Thursday evenings, at a local restaurant. Now, this is for people who are feeling extremely busy and rushed all the time, or perhaps you feel like your life is slipping by and your dream is slipping by with it, or maybe you just feel that you don't have enough time for yourself. You've been giving so much to your family and your friends and your job and so forth. So join us twice a month. We have a wonderful time sharing tips, techniques, ideas that have worked for others. And I assure you, you're going to enjoy it. Now, to join us, just go over to my website, ColorYourLifeHappy.com, and you'll see the sign up there for the meetup. Now, on this radio show, which just happens to have the same title as my book and everything else, Color Your Life Happy. We talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. Now, to get at that goal, each week I interview guests from various fields, such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change in adversity, all of those things that contribute to lasting happiness. Today, my guest is Kate Wright. Hi, Kate.
Hi, how are you?
I am great. I'm so happy to welcome you and so glad that you agreed to take time out of your schedule to be with us. I want to tell my listeners a little bit about you before we begin. Is that okay?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Now, Kate has shattered belief barriers and overcome great odds herself to become an accomplished entrepreneur in several unique industries. Now, Kate has been a top producer and a team builder in direct sales for almost 20 years. That alone is an accomplishment. Direct sales are tough for me. From 1999 to 2008, Kate was the lead singer and songwriter for the pop band Matson Bell. They have won 5 Austin Music Awards, woohoo, several international songwriting awards, and were nominated for an American Music Award. Oh, that's, I love to sing, but I haven't reached that level. During this time, Kay completed the Los Angeles Marathon. Oh, my God. She was the lead actress also in a Hollywood feature film. In addition, if that wasn't all enough, Kate founded FatNoggin.com, the world's first website that brings reading to the workplace by allowing companies to create a book club, invite their employees, and buy their books all in one place, with a book catalog of over 2.2 million book titles. If that wasn't enough, Kate is also the author of The Million Dollar Parent, How to Have a Successful Career While Keeping Your Family a Top Priority. And she is the self-proclaimed fastest diaper changer in the world. Woo! Did you go on the Guinness Book of World Records to get that title?
Not yet, but I'm working on
Not
it.
Not yet. That's why it says self-proclaimed, huh?
Exactly.
Kate lives in Austin, Texas, with her husband Daniel and 2 small children. Welcome so much to the show, Kate.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Your biography is amazing, so it sounds like you can tell us a lot about a number of areas. So we need to get started right away with one of the ones that mothers and fathers face today, and that is many of them are working full-time. So how is that full-time job or that full-time commitment affecting families and children?
Well, it affects them tremendously. I heard a statistic last year that 71% of American households have both mother and father who work full-time, which as a result, that means those children are in full-time care with somebody other than mother and father, I mean, if you do the math. And I think that if you look at just the way we raise kids and just family values and family units 20, 30, 40 years ago, or even how European countries even today, you know, developed countries raise their children today, it's just, it's night and day difference. I mean, it's, you know, you heard that saying, it takes a village to raise a child, and that's so,
right.
so true. But if that village isn't there and those people, not just mother and father, but also aunts and uncles and grandma and grandpa, aren't there, then kids are literally raising themselves, and they're spending more time with computers and TV and video games and iPods and this than they are with their parents, and it's having a tremendous effect on our kids. And so that's
right.
why I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I just said you're right, it is. And I wanted to add one thing. A lot of people think the solution is for parents to stop working or to have a one-parent working household, but that's not always possible for many families financially.
Right. It's funny. There was a talk show a few months ago, and it was like the war against the moms. They had the working moms on one side and the stay-at-home moms, and they were both pointing the finger at each other saying, you're terrible. No, you're terrible. And I wanted to jump inside the TV and say, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's not one or the other. There is a way to have a successful career, but also, you know, make that time for your children. And It's really step one of everybody, whether you work from home or work part-time or full-time, you know, staying in control of your own schedule, you know. And I think too many times we let our boss and our manager and our CEO, you know, dictate when and where we have to be, and then we kind of push everything else aside to accommodate that. But I know before I even had children, when I worked in corporate America, and I'll go through this with you in a minute, but you know, I found a way to approach my boss and say, you know, working 8 to 5:30 is just not working for me, you know. You know, and I presented a different schedule, and it worked like a charm. And then even being self-employed, there's a very strict schedule that I keep in order to spend, you know, adequate amount of time with my children every day. If you want to get into that a little bit later, we can, or if you want me to go into that.
No, let's get into it now, because the that whole idea of negotiating for fewer work hours with your boss, and then, of course, even if you're self-employed, you have to negotiate with yourself.
Exactly.
To limit your time, control your time. So let's talk about how someone who's listening right now would begin this transition of working fewer hours without getting fired, of course.
Sure, exactly. That's the key right there. Well, one thing you've got to remember that's in your favor is that it is far more affordable for a company to keep you on board and work with your schedule than it is for them to replace you with somebody else. It costs the company a tremendous amount of money to replace you and hire somebody new and start a new benefits package. They'd much rather work with you. So keep that in mind when you go in, that it's, you know, everyone thinks that they're always on the chopping blocks, but that's not the case at all. They want to make you happy and keep you there. So with that, and this is actually, I worked for a staffing firm here in Austin. This is back in 2002, 2003. I didn't have children at the time, but my schedule was I had to be there at 8 o'clock. I couldn't leave till 5:30. I had almost an hour commute each way. If you do the math, I mean, I was spending a good, you know, 12 hours a day either getting ready or going to or being at my job, and I had very little time left over at the end of the day to do anything. And so I was just worn out. So I'll just say, pretend, Dr. Brown, if you're my employer, I'll just role play with you. This is quote, word for word what I said. Actually, this is in my book, too, if anybody wants a script, so to say. Actually, in one of the chapters of my book, I wrote it out line for line.
Okay.
So what I did is I came into, I'll just say, Dr. Brown's my boss, and I said, Dr. Brown, hi, it's Kate. I wanted to chat with you for a minute. Do you have 10 minutes?
Okay, sure. I'll give you 10 minutes.
Good. I just wanted to let you know, first of all, I thoroughly enjoy working for your company. I mean, you guys are a phenomenal organization. You guys run a tight ship. I love my coworkers. I definitely want to continue working here. One thing I wanted to ask you, though, is, you know, I come in at 8 o'clock every morning, and I don't leave till 5:30, and it's, you know, my overall, you know, well-being is very important to me, you know, getting adequate exercise and cooking healthy meals at home and being able to walk my dog and do service projects with my church. And, you know, because of my schedule, I'm having a hard time doing those things. So I just wanted to ask if starting on Monday, if I could start coming in at 4 or at 9 o'clock, and then heading out of here at 4 o'clock, and I'll just eat lunch here at my desk. I won't take a lunch break. But if you could just give me 1 month to prove to you and to myself that I can be just as productive working from 9 to 4 as I am working from 8 to 5:30, if you could just give me 1 month to prove that to you, if it works out, great, then we'll all stay on that schedule. If it doesn't work out, then in a month, you know, I'll go back to my original schedule. But would you give me a chance to prove to you that I can be just as successful working from 9 to 4 as I was from 8 to 5:30?
Okay, I suppose we could do that, especially if you're going to promise me that you're going to be just as productive. And I will be watching from week to week.
I'll let
you know. But I like the fact that you're willing to take your lunch at your desk, and that will help conserve some time there. So, okay, that sounds
great.
Like a plan.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I'll keep you posted each week how things are going. And it's funny, this is now off the script. Every single person who I've coached to say this, or maybe they heard me on a radio interview or at a keynote speaking engagement, who's approached their boss, every single one of them have emailed me or called me or sent me a letter saying that it works. It works, it works, it works, it works. Or in lieu of asking to work from 9 to 4, you can say, you know, can I work from home? Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. You know, if you have a type of job that can be done remotely, you can also throw that. And if I was smart enough at the time, that's what I would have asked for, is because my job was, you know, I was I easily could have done my job from home as well. And my personal opinion is that if you're going to work 8, 10, 12 hours a day to help a company be successful, the least they can do is to work with you to help you be a successful parent or success or just a happy person. And if they're not willing to work with you on that, then while you're employed, it's time to put your resume out there and find another company to work for. I mean, seriously.
That's true. And one of the things that is in our favor these days is that more and more people are taking that approach and more companies are recognizing that. One of the things I want to add to that, too, is people who are seeking new jobs can have this in mind in the beginning and won't have to wait until they start.
Yep,
My
2 years ago, right when the economy fell to pieces, my husband had finished school, so he was looking, you know, to get into his career, and and he, you know, of course, when you're married to somebody who promotes work-life balance all day, you don't have many options but to kind of go through this. But he, during his job interview, and this is when the economy was a mess and millions of people were being laid off. You'd think, you know, of all times to be asking for favors, you know, would this be the time? And I told my husband, I said, absolutely, because if you go work for a company that's not conducive to work-life balance, you're going to be out of there in 6 months anyways, starting all over again. And so he did, and in his interviews, he said he wanted to work within 20 minutes from home because, you know, have, you know, commute time, you got to factor that in. That's time away from life and family and all that. He wanted a company that had flexible schedules where he could go in early, like at 7:30 when, you know, our kids start school, and be out by 3:45 or 4 o'clock. He wanted to be able to take a 30-minute lunch instead of an hour lunch, because some companies, they automatically factor in an hour, and you're stuck with that hour no matter what. And, yes, he interviewed for probably, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 different companies, but he found that one that was willing to – it met all the criteria. It was a 20-minute drive. He gets to go in early and leave early. He's a 30-minute lunch, and he loves who he works for, I think primarily because it's a flexible schedule for his personal life. So I agree with what you said. If you're interviewing, absolutely set standards for yourself.
Definitely. It puts you in a different mindset, too, when you're working with a company or working for a company that you're working with to help reach their goals, because they're trying to help you reach yours. And I want to emphasize what you said about commuting. Now, here in California, it is very common for people to commute an hour or more to work one way. And I tell people all the time, you have to count the commute. You have to count the commute as part of your day, because if you're commuting even more than an hour, you are, especially if you're having to navigate a couple of freeways and then park, you could arrive at work tired.
I agree.
You've already diminished your effectiveness. So you've got to count the commute. And another thing I wanted to say about your script, one of the things people can consider instead of asking to come later is to ask to come a lot earlier.
Exactly.
I have a friend who wanted to work earlier. In her case, her son was grown and gone, but she was on a job where the work could essentially be done any time. And because the building opened earlier, she negotiated to get in a couple of hours early.
Exactly.
And she loved it because the traffic was easier, the parking was easy, and then by the midpoint of the day, when people were taking lunch and tired, she was done.
Exactly. And so I love how you mentioned the commute. I write about this in my book as well. Let's say if you have just an hour commute, which is what I had at my old job, and it's 2 hours a day, but that's, you know, 10 hours a week. You're just sitting in your car doing nothing.
Right.
And if you take, 10 hours, that's, as far as time with your children, that is huge. You know,
that's huge.
Think how many trips to the park that is, or a service project. That's like a whole day of work in itself, just commute time. That's 2-3 rounds of golf. That's 4 movies. That's, if you calculate, the things that we all really love to do, and that's why people aren't able to do things they want to do is because they're spending all day in their car doing stuff.
In the car. That's right.
It's not
and
productive.
Even though it's wonderful to listen to motivational tapes and so forth, I've heard people say, oh, I love it that I have a commute because I can listen to motivational tapes. Well, part of the job of motivational tapes is to get you to do something, and you aren't doing it when you're in your car. So now what is the one key thing parents must change in order to work less and spend more time with their kids? Now, you mentioned the actual time spent at work, and then the commute time, taking that into consideration. What else is there?
Well, I think one of the reasons that the majority of households nowadays, both mother and father, work full-time is because they've extended their cost of living so high that they feel that pressure that they both have to work that just to pay their bills and get by.
The
biggest key is that if I have a mortgage calculator in my book, which isn't your typical mortgage calculator, because most mortgage calculators, as you know, if you put in your income, they figure out a house for you that's really five times what you really can afford, you know.
Right, right.
Especially if you have children and you have, you know, ballet classes and soccer teams that they're on and trips to SeaWorld and, you know, things of that nature. And that's
when
everyone ends up in trouble and in debt.
That's right.
But,
that's right.
And I truly believe that if every family can live off of one income or one and a half incomes, like a full-time parent and a part-time parent, if everybody would just live below their means. But it's just a huge, if you call it an epidemic that we have in our country, of even with what we've been through with the economy. I just had a conversation last night with a colleague of my husband's, and he said, I guarantee most people still haven't, even you think that the last 2 years would have been a wake-up call, but look at all the people that are still buying homes they can't afford, and they're still buying these gigantic cars that are gas guzzlers, and they're still doing all these things instead of cutting back and learning from what we've all been through the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
People just have such a hard time in America scaling back. So
I figured out
a way for parents or families to plug in what's most, like all the things they want to do as a family and things that are most important, that things that cost money, you know, either for mom or dad or for the kids. And then with whatever's left over, you know, then you can figure out what you can buy for a house. But typically it's the other way around. Everyone spends all their money on a house. And then if they have anything left, they'll invest in their future, college funds or whatever. But you've got to do it the other way around or else you're going to end up like in trouble. So the number one thing I think parents need to do is to learn how to just scale back. Instead of having a 3,000-square-foot home, have a 1,200-square-foot home. You know, instead of having a big 7-seater car, have a 4-seater car or a – you know, and just scale back and live a simple lifestyle and invest in more quality things and more meaningful things than just stuff.
Right. And by all means, don't buy your children designer clothes when they're toddlers. I had a fight with my children. I have 4 children. I had a fight with them when they were growing, well, the first one or two, over designer jeans, I remember. And I told my oldest daughter, I said, when the designer starts wearing my name on her butt, that's when you'll wear her name on your butt. I'm not buying something just to have their name. And it was a fight because it's when you talk about the epidemic, part of it is the people that we're, you know, the news media, the advertising, and then the children your kids associate with in the neighborhood and at school, you know, all of those things are working against you scaling back because it's such a habit.
And they see their peers have all this stuff and they want it too. And I just from day one have just said, my daughter always says, but they do this, but they have this, but they. And I just say, honey, I don't care what other people do. I just don't care, you know, to say this is what's important to our family. This is the way we're doing things. And if they want to do that, that's their prerogative. But, you know, the way – and usually I can throw in, like, a value lesson or, you know, we – you know, she's starting to get the age where she understands that things cost money, you know, when they're young, they think everything's for free. And I just say, honey, you know, that's $100. Do you understand how much $100 is? That's a, you know, however many – I'm not a mathematician. What, 1,000 penny? How much is 10,000? Help me out here.
Right.
However many thousand. And then she, oh, you know, and then she finally, I said, do you have 1,000 pennies that you can contribute? No. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we're not doing it. And And because I just know that even if we can afford those things, as soon as you open the floodgates and start buying everything
right.
that they need and want and everything else has, it's all over. It's hard to turn back.
It's hard to turn back.
That.
And you're teaching them a terrible lesson about seeking gratification and validation from things. And that's even worse than spending the money. Now, tell us the website where or how people can get your mortgage calculator.
If you go to my website, it's themilliondollarparent.com or just milliondollarparent.com, and then click on the tab that says free stuff, and then just plug in your email address, and then there's not just a mortgage calculator, but there's many other little formulas and exercises on there as well.
Okay, so we can do themilliondollarparent.com, or we could do it without the word the. We could just do milliondollarparent.com.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Either way, it'll come up.
Okay,
yep.
That's cool. Now, you coach parents in your book about how to work a four-hour workday.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever lost a sale or missed some business opportunity because of such a tight schedule?
You know, I'm asked that all the time, and originally I thought I would because, you know, I used to work 10, 12, 14, 18-hour days like a lot of people, and then when my daughter was born, I said, okay, I just personally wasn't willing to have her in daycare more than part-time, more than 4 hours a day. And so I had to figure out, you know, how to be successful in a four-hour workday. And believe it or not, I had have had my best years ever since then. I think just because when you're focused and you only have a very limited schedule, you know, you don't waste a lot of time doing stuff that's not productive. But what's interesting is that let's say if my schedule is 10 to 2, and let's say I'm talking to a prospective client at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, and they say, you know, I'm kind of busy right now, but can you catch me back at 6 o'clock this evening? You know, and I know that's my family time. You know, I think most people typically say, yeah, okay, well, I'll get my spouse to watch the kids and I'll be here at 6. But what I've learned to say is I say, let's say if I was talking to you, I'd say, gosh, Flora, you know, I would love to come see you at 6 o'clock. However, from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. is my family time, and my kids are, of course, my number one priority. So we can just go ahead and wrap up business now, or I can catch you back tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, which one would be better for you?
Right,
and at first,
right.
They're kind of like processing, like, wow, she just turned down a business opportunity so she can spend time with her kids. And they're like, you can kind of see the spark in their eye. They're like, and I think when you're in business and sales, you know, people are always taking that temperature gauge with your integrity. And I think when people see that I want to keep my kids my priority, we're going to have to do business at some other time, you know, they see you have integrity and they want to do business with you more.
Exactly.
And then they will work with your schedule instead of you running around, you know, trying to, you know, work on their schedule. I mean, probably every day or every week there's somebody I have to say no thanks to because, you know, they want to do business at 5, 6, or 7. However, that's my family time. And I just say, well, we can do it from 10 to 2, or we can do it another time, another week, another month, another year. You know, what will work for you? And they're always willing to accommodate me. And so I don't think, I mean, if I have lost some business because of it, I have far, 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 far made up for it on the back end. And I'm such a big believer is that, you know, whether you believe in God or not, I just feel that God in my life is always watching me, and he's always watching where I keep my priorities. And when I have my priorities straight, I'm rewarded 1,000 times more on the back end. And then when I don't have my priorities straight, ironically, things are a lot more difficult to accomplish. You know,
well,
it's kind of ironic how that happens.
A lot. You've accomplished a lot in 38 years, my goodness. So obviously you're doing something right. What has been your biggest failure, and how have you overcome any failures that you've had?
Oh, well, I've failed at almost everything I've done in some sense. I mean, let's just take the music industry, you know, when I first started off, I mean, early on when I really, really wanted to be a singer when I was a teenager, I was terrible. I mean, I was in the school choir and I was always the one stuck on the back row. And when I auditioned for the school plays and the school musicals, I never got cast. I just wasn't good, and I'm not saying that just so people say, oh, yes, you were. I really was not very good. And then I went to college, auditioned for all the musical things in college, never got a part. I mean, I was just rejected. And nowadays, you know, you see these people that are successful musicians in their 20s, and they all started when they were young teenagers. So
yes,
it's kind of like if you didn't do well then, you're not ever going to do well. Well, I just, all through my 20s, I still had such a love for music. And so I just, in my car, I sang, in the shower, I sang. I just sang. And I think I just eventually, my vocal cords just started developing. I really think that it's just
started
like
cooperating.
They start cooperating, yeah. And I think it's like if you're out of shape physically and you might not have a naturally, you know, muscular body or whatever, but if you just put your mind to it and get on a healthy, you know, workout schedule and you eat well, that you'll eventually, you know, some people it's harder for others, but I think eventually you'll get in shape, you know. I think it's the same thing with my voice. I just was naturally very out of shape, and then I kind of grew my own voice. And then I didn't record my first demo CD till I was, I want to say 27, 28, which in the music industry, that was very late, very old.
Yes,
I'm an old lady, you know, at 27. But then once I got things going, they started going very, very quickly. I think a part of it, because I knew that the clock was ticking, and part of it was I just put pedal to the metal, and then by the time I was 29 or 30, my band and I were off to the races. So,
wonderful.
So I mean, it was 10, 15 years in the making. I think most people would have given up back in high school when the choir teacher, you know, doesn't cast them and
put you in the back row.
Yeah, and I mean, for 10 solid years, nobody would cast me or hire me as a singer, and it took me just fighting for something I believed in and that I loved and never giving up on that. And then if you look at everything else I've done, it's kind of the same thing. I started off, everyone's, oh my goodness, you can't do that. And I just didn't give up, and I just fought tooth and nail and figured out a way to make it work.
Well, you're proof of my belief that an overnight success takes about 10 years.
Oh, yes.
People say, she's an overnight success. Yeah.
Oh, no,
about
yeah.
10 years to get to that overnight. Now, Kate, talk about accomplishments. Now, this past year, you've given birth to a baby. So that was this past year, right?
That was
or year before.
2008. Now that we're in 2000, that would be the year before that. But still,
okay.
Yeah.
Still. You gave birth to a baby, you wrote a book, you launched a website, you started a service organization, and I'm already tired. So how in the world did you do it and still get 8 hours of sleep every night? What's the secret? How did you do all that?
Well, it was kind of what I did is I think a lot of times, well, my children, my infant, you know, he went to bed at 7. My oldest daughter, she goes to bed at 8. And I think a lot of people, you know, once the kids are in bed, they're in front of the TV watching American Idol and, you know, Survivor. And granted, I love those shows too. But what I did during those times is, I mean, from 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. until 11 o'clock at night, I mean, that's really when I hunkered. That's when I wrote my book. That's when I developed Fat Noggin. There's a lot of the phone calls and emails I made regarding the service project that I started. So, you know, I've always tried to keep a 4 or 5 hour work day. Well, it was kind of 7, 8 to 11 became, I just did it all at night. And then during the day, I was with the baby all day. And then when he took naps, you know, infants, they sleep like 3 times a day.
Right,
so an
right.
Hour here, an hour here. So that gave me, that bought me, and I usually try to sleep at least one because, you know, new mothers are exhausted.
That's right.
So at least one of those naps I would try to sleep while he slept. But then the other two, that bought me another 2, 2.5, 3 hours to do some daylight hour work. So I really, I mean, I was a stay-at-home mom, but wrote a book, launched a website, and started a service project all really while the baby was sleeping during the day or once my kids were in bed at night. And then I just recorded my favorite shows, and I watched them, like Sunday afternoon was kind of my day to just chill out and do nothing and get caught up on fun stuff, you know. So that's how I did it.
You maximized your use of time when you're and worked it around your baby's schedules. That's what you did.
Exactly. And most people kind of do it the other way around. They, sorry, the office phone here is beeping at me.
That's okay.
Most people, they work. They kind of put all their work stuff first. Mm-hmm. And then if and when they have any time and energy left over, they'll devote that to their kids. But we all know so many days you get home, you're wiped out, you're tired, you're stressed, and you don't have anything left to give. But
that's
if you
right.
carve out the right. time first for your children or for whatever it is that you love to do or whatever your priorities are, and then whatever's left, devote that to work, not only will you be so much more satisfied, but you're actually more productive because, you know, you just eliminate a lot more of your distractions and time wasters.
Right, right. Now, you worked as a corporate recruiter for 2 years, correct?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
We've talked about this a little bit already, but what advice do you have for the listeners as to getting the job of their dreams, even in a bad economy? Because this is one of the things people think they have to give up during a bad economy. And how important is where you work to allowing you to have more time with your family?
That's a really good question. I would say, number one, make a list of places that are companies that you want to work for, not just anybody that's hiring warm bodies. But, you know, be picky. You know, say, I want to work for a hospital. I want to work with somebody that does health care. You know, to make a list of all the hospitals and facilities in your area. Or I want to work, you know, do something with software. You know, make your top 10 list. You know what you want to do first. And then the biggest key to getting your foot in the door and actually getting the job, this is a common mistake people make, especially nowadays with the internet, with Monster and Career Builder, a lot of people think that the way to get a job is just posting your resume and then sitting back
right.
and waiting for the phone to ring. And are
right.
there some people that get jobs that way? Yes, but they're very, very few and far between. What you have to do is send your resume directly to whoever is hiring. And then the biggest key is following up, follow up, follow up, follow up, because no one else is following up. So it's going to set you apart from them. And this is, I'll role play with you. Let's say I wanted to go work for Dr. Flora Brown, and I sent you my resume. You know, a few days later, I'll call you up, and even if I get your voicemail, I'll just say, hi, are you Flora Brown?
Yes, this is Flora Brown.
Hi, this is Kate Wright. I sent you my resume last week because I feel I'm a great candidate for your organization and for the XYZ position. And I just wanted to touch base with you to see when I could come in to meet you face-to-face. Would tomorrow work better or Friday?
Okay. I like that you gave me a choice between
yeah.
tomorrow and Friday. What about tomorrow around 1 o'clock? Are you
okay.
available?
I am. And then you go in, and you got to assume that they got your resume. You have to assume that they love you, and you have to assume they want to meet with you. And if
okay.
you just say, "Hi, my name is Kate Wright. I sent you my resume last week for the such and such position. I think I'm a fabulous candidate for your company or your organization.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to come in to meet you face to face. Would tomorrow at 2 o'clock be better or Thursday?
Right.
I mean, give them two options. Would tomorrow be
give
better
them two
or
options.
Thursday?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And don't give
now,
them an
if
out.
They haven't if they haven't received your resume, what?
Oh,
how do
they
you
oh, haven't gotten that. Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. Well, I sent it to florabrown@gmail.com. Is that your current email address?
Yes,
okay.
it is. But you know, I get so much email. Maybe I just haven't seen it, you know?
That's
but
okay.
Send it again?
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll go ahead and send it again here in the next 5 minutes,
okay.
and then I'll give you a
okay.
call back tomorrow, and then
we'll
touch base from there. Okay?
Okay, that'll be great.
So do it. Yeah, send it again. Follow up. You know, the story I always tell, this is also in my book, is that when I was a new musician in Los Angeles, I mean, I had no manager, no record label, no publicist. I was just booking shows all by myself. Well, I was dying to play the Viper Room. That's like the club on the Sunset Strip Johnny Depp
uh-huh.
used to own. It's like pretty well
okay.
known out there. And
uh-huh.
usually only big name bands get to book there. So I sent my little demo CD to the lady who booked the bands, and I called her up and I said, "Hi, I was Kate Walker at the time. This is Kate Walker," and she said, "Who?" I said, "I sent you my CD." "No, I haven't listened to it." And I said, "Okay, well, I know it's there." I said, "I'll give you through the week to listen to it, and I'll call you back on Friday." I called back on Friday. She said, "Yeah, I still haven't listened to it. I don't know who you are. I don't know your music." And I said, "Well, go ahead and listen to it. I'll if you like it, you know, you can book me. If not, no big deal. I'll call back next week." I called them 14 times.
Oh, my
gosh. I was just pleasantly, and she finally said, she goes, she was kind of laughing. She said, you know, I don't know who you are. She's like, I've never done this, but because you are so pleasant when you call and you're been so nice and so persistent, I'm going to go ahead and book you. She says, I have never booked anyone without listening to their music. She's like, I hope you're good,
oh
by the
God.
Way. And I got the gig at the Viper Room, and it was just because
oh
I was
God.
Pleasant, and the key is pleasantly
pleasant.
Persistent. If you call and I was like, ah, God, well, it didn't take more than 10 minutes, you know, to listen to my CD, or God, you know, open your email to get my resume. I mean, they're never going to want you to. But if you're
no.
just like, okay, not a big deal, I'll send it again. I'll call back tomorrow, not a problem. And then you do, you follow through, and every time you talk to them, you're very pleasant. It is amazing how much more success you will have, not just in
That's
resumes
true.
Or job
That's
hunting,
true.
But in anything in life. So, and then also after your interview, follow up as well. Don't just wait
right.
for them to call and say yes or no, we want to hire you. As soon as you're done, you know, call them the very next day and just say, hi, it's Kate Wright calling back again. Thank you so much for your time yesterday. It was such a great pleasure meeting you and the whoever else you met that day.
Uh-huh.
I feel I'm a great candidate for the position I interviewed for. I just wanted to see if there's a time I can come in for a second interview or for a follow-up, if you know yet you know, the status of this position.
Uh-huh.
And then just by calling and following up, it is amazing how much
yes.
you can accomplish in this world.
And one of the things that I don't think people think about is the fact that even if you don't get that particular job, many of people in the same industry know each other and talk to each other, people in key positions. And so if nothing else, you can build a network, or, you know, you leave a good impression like you did with the
oh,
lady
yeah.
at the Viper Room. You leave a good impression with her. And then when she's in conversation with somebody else who also books
exactly.
performers, your name may come up, or she may recommend you, because people who are in the same positions in different companies tend to network together. They have associations. So that's a big reason why that follow-up and being pleasant is very important. Even if you don't get that particular
it's
job, you're building
true.
For the future. Yeah.
And even though a lot of your listeners live in L.A. or San Diego, you think, oh, there's
mm-hmm.
millions of people. I'll never run into these people again. Oh, you'll be so surprised.
Oh, no.
The
yes.
person you talk back to, or that you upset, or that you made a terrible impression with, I guarantee
right.
you will bump into that person again.
That we have 2 minutes left of showtime, and I have a bunch more questions I want to ask you. So it looks like we may have to reschedule a follow-up interview at some time in the future. But I do want you to tell us if you have any last-minute words, and also I want you to push your book so that people go over and take a look at it, and more importantly, buy it.
Yes. Well, my book is titled The Million Dollar Parent, and it's
mm-hmm.
I truly believe that even if you don't have children, whether you have kids or no kids, or you're young or in your senior years or whatever, there's something in my book that can change anybody's life, whether it be, you know,
okay.
the mortgage calculator, or how to you know, the resume techniques or the interview techniques that are in there for, you know, getting a different job, or
mm-hmm.
how to start a service project, or money management. I mean, there's something in there that I think everybody can learn from. And the last thing I would just leave off with is just remember that if you are a parent, male or female, of any age children, that the job of a parent is the absolutely most important job on planet Earth. I don't
right,
care if you're a
right.
brain surgeon or what you do. There's nothing uh-huh. more important than quality parenting, because you not
yes.
only affect your children, but everybody your children come in contact with are affected by the parenting that you provide them. So
yes.
so just always keep in mind, it's not about the amount of money you make or the stock options or the, you know, the bonuses at work. It's about investing in your kids emotionally and raising them well. So I just hope if anybody can learn any one thing from today, is just to always keep your kids a priority.
That is so true. Thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
We are near the end of today's show. Thanks so much again for coming. I want to urge all of you who have been enlightened, encouraged, and empowered by today's episode to share what you've learned with your family and colleagues. Remember, the recording of the episode will be here on my website at blogtalkradio.com flora.com/FloraBrown, or you can return at any time to hear it. You may download it to your computer, or you may subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. There are many ways to access this episode. I want to thank you for tuning in and invite you to join me again next Monday, May 24th at 11 a.m. for another inspiring and exciting show. Remember to visit my website, coloryourlifehappy.com, where you can learn about all the other programs that I offer. This is Flora Brown of Color Your Life Happy saying goodbye, and thank you for tuning in. Have a blessed week, and remember...